Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to the fourth podcast in a special series that we're running on rebalancing the work-life experience. This is a podcast series where I talk to leading industry experts on how property helps businesses perform, and really the emphasis is on the employee and what works for them. Never has this been more important than now, for all the obvious reasons. And today, we're going to focus on discussing culture, wellness, mental health, burnout, stress, you name it, we've probably all suffered from it at some points in our career. And to do this, I have two people on air. Firstly, Whitney Austin Gray, who's Senior Vice President at the International Well Building Institute. Welcome, Whitney.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Stephen Zatter, who's the Global Lead Research and Innovation for Total Workplace at Cushman & Wakefield. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Michael. Very happy to be here.
Maybe we can just kick off, guys, with a quick kind of bio or explanation of background. So why don't we start with you, Whitney?
Sure. Well, hi, everyone out in the virtual world. It's wonderful to have a chance to connect with you. So I think the best way to describe me is kind of like a designer groupie, you know, kind of like the band groupie that follows designers everywhere. So my PhD is in public health. So I focus on translating evidence-based research into practice. But I love working with designers and real estate experts because the translation, the business case, the application, the operation, and the effectiveness of understanding of public health and how people interact in space is critical that we're able to work across disciplines. And I think there's no time like now to talk about how we understand humans interacting in environments and how that needs to be translated to practice rapidly. At the International Wellbuilding Institute, I lead research. We're very excited that our company launched the WELL Building Standard in 2014. So happy to talk a little bit more about that, but we're over 5 years old. We're a half a billion square feet, and we are in 59 countries around the world. So my focus specifically is working to translate the WELL Building Standard. And then before that, I served at innovation institutes. I've led research at design firms, and I also hang out at Georgetown. So if you're ever in DC, the other side of the world, and you want to stop in for a class, we are trying to teach real estate professionals and urban planners more about public health there.
Wow, that's quite a resume. Thanks. Stephen, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been working in the corporate real estate and workplace research terrain for quite a while, longer than I'd like to admit sometimes. But I've got a real strong interest in the connection between the concept of space and the impact that has on human experience, health, engagement, and things of that nature. I've been with Cushman for about 6 years, focusing on workplace consulting and research and product creation. And a lot of what I do is design different types of quantitative and qualitative research studies based on data collection and analytics so that we can generate evidence-based insight and guidance for organizations and for ourselves on the alignment of work and business outcomes and, you know, people well-being. I think right now it's a very intense and scary time, but it's also just a critical time to be focusing on the concept of employee experience, employee health, employee well-being, and to understand how organizations, as they can think about managing the work environment, whether that's in an office or it's at home or it's back and forth, and thinking about their people, it's a critical time to be doing that. And so, you know, very excited to be having this opportunity to talk with both of you about it today.
Great. And thanks for that. And I guess my job now is to try and weave the work and the data that you two have both been doing and working with into a podcast here. So, Whitney, why don't we start with you? And maybe you could talk a little bit about pre-pandemic, what was happening at the WELL Institute and what kind of things have you been looking at?
Sure, absolutely. So the WELL Building Institute focuses predominantly on the WELL Building Standard. So this is the first building certification system in the world focused on human health and well-being. And many people have asked us, why do you have to call it a healthy building? Aren't buildings just meant to be healthy? And unfortunately, we're still looking at 1 in 3 buildings internationally being a sick building. So if you spend 90% of your time indoors, if you are 50 years old, that's 45 years of your life. I think a lot of people are rethinking just how much time they spend indoors right now during the pandemic. And you can ask yourself, have you adapted or have you maladapted? And several of the significant chronic disease conditions related with inactivity, poor access to food, and actually increasing issues around asthma and allergies are also derived by this increased access to indoor environments. So what's sort of interesting is with the WELL Building Standard, I mentioned we're in about 59 countries, and we train professionals to get their WELL accredited professional training, so their WELL AP. And from that group of people, and they really are our front lines, because we have people in Dublin and Dubai and Dallas, and the environments are very different. People are 99.8% genetically similar around the world, but environments are very different. Offices are very different. The culture of health and behavior is very different. So we have over 10,000 WELL APs around the world that are really working with clients to pursue the WELL Building Standard. And of all the architects I've met, a lot of people in design, even engineering practices in real estate, none of their formal training required them to take a class in health. So we're talking about, you know, over 10,000 individuals. We've spoken to many more, and I've never had someone say I was required as an architect to take a course in health. I hope we're changing that. And there's a lot of people that are professionally trained as architects and designers and real estate experts to learn about health, but many aren't. And so here we go, right? So we're inside 90% of our time. We're in buildings. One in three are considered a sick building. And the people that are up to designing it, running it, and operating it have not had a chance of any formal training in health. Yet we're trusting 45 out of the 50 years of our life to these people. So we think we can do better. And I've never met someone that has said, you know, wow, Whitney, I just really can't wait to design an unhealthy building, or I really enjoy leasing an unhealthy building, right? I like to think no one wants to do that. And so the WELL Building Standard really provides the ultimate way of providing a path for clients to understand, how do I achieve a healthy environment beyond code? How do I train to understand what are the impacts of ventilation on human health, asthma, allergies? How do we talk about immunity in indoor space? It's a very relevant topic right now, or spread of viral load, which is, of course, also timely. But also, there's a lot of focus right now on immunity and host immunity, right? So thinking about resilience issues, what are you eating? How are you sleeping? How are you moving? How are you interacting? These are critical components that your building will impact on a day-to-day basis. So we think we have a really powerful impact to make. We think we have an incredible community of people, and we really welcome anyone into this community, whether you're a student or a seasoned professional. There's opportunities right now to learn about, you know, health in buildings. And I think we're really up to this, and we're really proud and excited to have Cushman & Wakefield as a partner, and always has been, to support an understanding of health in spaces.
Great. So much in that. I'm not kind of sure where to start, but so I'll thread over to you, Steve, but maybe you can talk to us a little bit of sort of other side of the coin in terms of the people who occupy buildings and what data you have around that, and this whole idea of wellness and sick buildings as Whitney's just outlined.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, we focus on measuring employee experience across a number of different factors using our experience per square foot diagnostic tool. And the wellness aspect of that is covered through a study of people's perception and feelings of ability to be productive, ability to collaborate with their colleagues, ability to really feel connected and bonded to their colleagues, and also through the concept of continuous learning and development, and then energy throughout the day. And so some of these things are very closely connected to the concept of wellness, so the sense of renewal and energy, bond to other human beings. But also, too, we found that the concept of feeling like you can do your best work and be productive and collaborate, those things also have a huge impact on the concept of well-being and wellness. And the physical environment, the building environment, has a tremendous impact on people's ability to feel effective in, across all those different measures. We actually have found that for the most part, when building quality isn't great, that people really push very hard to maintain high levels of productivity and focus. And that really comes at the expense it really comes at a high cost when it comes to the feeling of energy and well-being. So we've been studying for a while how we can try to help organizations really emphasize that concept of personal energy and renewal. And we found that a lot of the stuff that relates to that comes down to physical activity, movement, access to things like fresh air. So the things Whitney's talking about in terms of how the air quality in the building and things of that nature affect that kind of human performance and human feeling. From a data standpoint, before the pandemic, the concept of energy and renewal, that was our lowest scoring measure across the board. And we also saw that the second lowest scoring measure was that kind of personal connection to colleagues. And so we have been studying ways before the pandemic to really drive improvement in those areas for organizations. And we also were looking at the concept of people who work from home before the pandemic as well. And, you know, we actually found that people who are work remote more often than coming into the office, they actually have higher scores across the board from experience and engagement than those in the office. And so we've been trying to understand kind of what are the drivers of those differences in experience and how can we apply some of the stuff that's working for those working remotely to the people in the office. We've seen some changes since the pandemic, of course, and we've been studying that through our experience with Square Foot at Home diagnostic. And I'm happy to talk about kind of where we've seen things going since the pandemic has started and the work from home experiment in a few minutes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That's great. And we definitely should come on to that. I guess I just want to take it back to you, Whitney, and maybe get you with your public health background, kind of open the conversation into sort of what we mean by wellness. I mean, and it can obviously, it doesn't matter whether it's in the office or working from home, but this whole concept of wellness, we've seen this massive rise in mental health issues, and particularly amongst the young in the last 5 to 10 years. And there's this almost, I think you were suggesting, almost a disregard inside the building or an architectural community for how much impact buildings have. So I'd kind of like to understand what's going on in that space, if you don't mind.
Sure. I think it's a great conversation. We hear this term tossed out all the time. So wellness is your pursuit of well-being. Well-being is a construct that we can clearly define within public health, and we study this construct. It's based on basically kind of 5 pillars that have to do with motivation and purpose and energy and drive. So what's interesting is in 1984, the World Health Organization defined health not merely as an absence of disease or injury, but the complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being. So although the WHO defined health and well-being as being one in the same, many people do not think it is. In fact, if I were to ask you today, you know, do you feel healthy? And particularly right now, you'd hear people say, I'm not sick. But that's really right. Not the whole picture, right? And right. People also understand that a lot of the precautions that we take in buildings, the design protocols, have a very interesting history in disease prevention. So for us today, we are now living through a pandemic. But before this, people, particularly generationally, did not have an institutional memory of what infectious diseases were like, truly. I mean, the last major infectious disease to substantially affect in the US, we're talking about polio, to really have a significant impact on day-to-day life, and then later on HIV and AIDS, that being a bloodborne. So we haven't really faced this idea. So now we're asking ourselves, okay, health is more than just disease, right? And there is something to do with wellness and well-being. What is that? I would actually argue that at times you could see someone that is heavily immunocompromised, stage 3, right, of cancer, but have very high well-being in their life. Or vice versa, you might see someone being has very high well-being, but reports, you know, or I should say has very high health, but very low well-being. So these are really important constructs. And mental disease, we need to rethink of it as mental health. I would even argue mental well-being. There's a reason that your head is connected to your body via your neck. So you can't ignore mental well-being. What's very interesting is that we focus on testing and tracking people's experience in well buildings. And when we ask people about mental well-being, it will shift throughout the day differently than we test on physical well-being. Because if you feel like you're sick or you've injured your ankle or you have a cold, that's pretty much throughout the day pretty much stays sort of stagnant, whereas mental well-being in the morning can be significantly different than in the afternoon. And so we sort of start to understand and track how significant this is. We are going to see a huge surge of focus on mental well-being. Companies are going to be looking at issues of post-traumatic stress disorder and post-traumatic growth post-pandemic as people return to the office. Issues of anxiety and fear will remain post the physical component of this pandemic, although it is clearly a biological or physical disease, a pathogen. Many people are dealing with the social or mental component of the disease, which has to do with that fear, the anxiety, the return to normal, the balance within their life. So well-being will come front and center. Companies should be asking themselves, how are we creating spaces that can support that mental and physical, not just health, but well-being, because well-being will also be critical to resiliency. And resiliency means that when something, basically when a stimuli attacks the host system, is that we have a supply, a surplus, we're able to deal with that stimuli and cope. And coping is a key word when it comes to stress. So those are a lot of kind of concepts intertwined, but what's important to remember is that wellness is the journey. Well-being is the construct or concept, is that when we think about well-being, it's not just physical, it is mental and social. And that issues around resilience and well-being are really critical. And I'll leave you with sort of an analogy I often use, kind of has to do with your well-being tank being full. And you can ask yourself right now if it's full. And it will literally be full when we get the things that we need. The closer we get to our natural forms, in large part, the more full it gets. So when we get the right amount of light at the right time of day, this influences our sleep. When we get the right amount of food, nourishment, micro, macro, we also, our body then digests and metabolizes that. So we're getting the kind of food and nourishment that we need and proteins to allow our body to do what it's supposed to do. If we have the right social connections with people, then we feel like particularly there's issues around serotonin, connection. We have really powerful neurotransmitters around social connectivity. I think you kind of get the point that the more that you are in sync with your body, the fuller that tank is. And if you have to go on a long drive all of a sudden, you can pull from that tank. Or if you need those reserves, you can use them. But if the tank is empty and you're not sleeping, you're not eating well, you're not getting outside, your social connections are depleted, all of a sudden, when a stimuli hits that system, when a stressor hits the system, you have nothing in the tank. It's empty. And that's when you see people reacting. This is issues around burnout. We'll start there, where there's no reserve, there's no resiliency. And so happy to talk about this more, but I'll kind of close there in saying that we're seeing increased focus on host immunity versus this over-focus on the virus alone because of the diversity with this pandemic. And so with host immunity comes resiliency, comes well-being, comes making sure that tank is full. And there are quite a few things that a lot of, I think, your viewers and listeners, as we work in the design and environment, can think about how we improve resiliency, mental and physical health to assure that our workforce is prepared with the tank full as they're returning to work.
Wow, there's so much in that. And the thing that I guess that jumps out for me is this mention of PTSD as a consequence of the pandemic. And if you couple that with, you know, whoever's managing probably won't have any thought about that, let alone any experience of it. Yet you're suggesting that as people are kind of allowed back out, we're going to be potentially faced with an awful lot of wellness issues that we've never had to face before, or the ones we've been facing have been exacerbated by the lockdown. So if we take that as a discussion point, and Stephen, I throw it back to you, what are you doing in and around that area, or what's your data showing you? Because it strikes me that that's a huge, huge issue that people aren't talking about at all at the moment.
I agree, Michael. I think it is a huge issue. And you know, as I was listening to Whitney's comments about well-being and the concept of mental and social and the kind of the tank being full, it was really apparent to me how some of the things we're seeing in our data relate tremendously closely to that, and also kind of raise some concerns or warning signs, so to speak. As I mentioned, when we study experience, you know, we look very closely at the kind of the social connection aspect. So the social connection from the standpoint of the employees sense of connection to their company and the cultural connection they feel to their company, and then also the social connection they feel to their colleagues. And what the data is showing us is that since the kind of work from home period that has begun globally with the pandemic, that collaboration has actually improved tremendously. So when it comes to people collaborating and getting their jobs done together as a team, we're doing fantastically well there across the board. The scary thing is the connection, the personal social connection between people has actually gotten much worse. And the sense of feeling culturally connected to the company is also very low. And so one of the biggest concerns we have coming out of the data analytics is that this kind of social connection concept that Whitney mentioned, that is depleted for people. And organizations really need to come up with ways that they can improve cultural connection, advance cultural connection, and then also improve the sense of bond and personal connection people feel to each other in this environment. And it's not just for today, right? Because right now, yes, everybody's working from home. Soon people are going to start going back to work, but it's not going to be even, and it may not be permanent. We're going to have periods of back and forth. Distributed workforce is going to come into more focus. And we're probably going to have a situation in the future with more people working from home, even when conditions do normalize way down the line. So how do we maintain this sense of culture, this sense of personal connection? And the data so far is indicating that there is some good news here. There are ways that we can do that. And a lot of these things relate to a lot of the stuff that Whitney's was talking about. From the standpoint of things companies can do to support this, we're seeing things like focusing on learning and development and making sure that people really understand not just who their colleagues are on a project, but understand who their fellow colleagues are from the perspective of human beings and what their job roles are. Even when they're not working together, if we understand how we all fit in together into the organization as colleagues, as people, we're seeing that that really can have a positive impact on culture and also bond. And the last thing I'll say about this is we're doing a little bit of study right now of our own company, Cushman & Wakefield. And I've been looking at, with my colleagues, looking at the different levels of cultural connection and colleague connection across our offices and looking at the ones that have higher scores there. And then we're studying what are the offices doing that have that higher level. So people working from home, but some areas, some markets we have are maintaining that higher level of culture and bond. And a lot of it comes down to these concepts of finding ways to keep the personal interaction, the personal understanding, and the connectivity going above and beyond simply the work. And there's a lot more to study there, but the good news is we do see a lot of positive opportunities to kind of maintain this sense of social connectivity and fill the tank from that perspective going forward.
Can I add to Stephen's comment there, Michael?
Yeah, go for it.
I just think it's fantastic. And I really, you know, the International Building Institute, we cannot support enough the power of data. In a time of confusion or overwhelm, data plays a really important role, but data is not information. And so we do need translators. And I really applaud Cushman Wakefield's work to look at the experience by square foot surveys. And you'll note it's not productivity by square foot or performance by square foot. I love that you're talking about experience. The four walls that we consider our work environment just got blurry. And those lines have now emerged into home environments. And we are in the largest work from home modern day experiment ever. And you can absolutely be rest assured that afterwards, people are going to say, why were we working 9 to 5? Why was I commuting 9 to 5? The office of the 1950s required us to go in because that was how we were able to work with the equipment, right? We required the equipment to do the work. So now that's declined. We don't need the equipment. Many people have their own equipment at home. So a lot of people argue they go to the office for connectivity. They go to connect with others because we feel like we belong to something when we're in those four walls called our work environment. If you're familiar with Maslow's pyramid, belongingness is critical, right? So we talk about survivorship is that we need to belong to something. And now people are isolated. Those four walls and lines have gotten very blurry. And they're asking themselves, is work going to be the same in the future? How do I change those four walls, blur those lines, still connect and have a belonging to my workplace? And what is that experience going to be like? And I think many of us are in a reactionary phase where it feels like this happened to us. I have no choice. This is not the way I want it to be. Give me what I know. But there's a really interesting model around the stages of grief. And I encourage those to look at it because many people are occurring, you know, going through these stages. But at the other side is acceptance. And there's some very powerful, creative, and incredible people within the real estate sphere that are rethinking all of this and saying, actually, this is a huge opportunity to rethink experience. And, you know, with Cushman Wakefield's work to look specifically at not just work, but also experience of space, you're going to see 9-to-5 shift. You're going to see different times, I think, in the workplace shift, whether that's team A, team B. You're going to see a real allowance for diversity of needs in the population where people say, I'm disabled, neurodiversity issues. I don't work well in certain environments where it's loud and noisy. I'm going to prefer to work from home for certain hours. I think this is going to change and significantly affect how people use space, at what hours they use space, and what different populations are asking for. And the most agile organizations are going to understand that and to be able to adapt, is that as much as you want to go back to the way it was, you won't, right? This is fundamentally changing. And there's a huge opportunity on the other side of that, is that you were not meant to work from 9-to-5 and sit at a desk. Sitting is the new smoking, and we've been saying that for a while. You were not meant to sit in the same place for prolonged periods and breathe stale air in beige cubicles, right? And smell someone else's lunch that they're eating next to you, right? There's a different way to look at this. And I think we're really touching on these critical components of how people are meant to thrive best. And we have an opportunity to reconceptualize our offices.
I agree. And I think if we just go back to your stages of grief, sort of ending with acceptance, and of course, the one that goes after that, which people now talk about, is sort of what good could you take from it? And that's exactly what you've been describing, is how do we take what's now happening to us and make what we go back to a better place, and learn from everything that we've now been experiencing. So, and I guess my question to sort of dig a bit further into this is, how do we get the well-being that you've been talking about, and that the whole kind of construct, as you call it, around well-being, married to the real estate? And it may come through data. And that's, I think, as an industry, we're poor at using data to drive outcomes. But Stephen, I don't know if you have a view on that, or that's something you're beginning to think about. But unless we figure out how to take what Whitney's been talking about and push that into design, and remember, right at the beginning, Whitney, you were saying that all the design people you've talked to and the architects have never been taught about this, so they don't know about it, they can't design for it. How do we change the model, the paradigm? What's the paradigm shift that we now need to force on our industry to get this right?
So I think that the current crisis and the challenges that it's bringing, has brought and continues to bring, are actually going to accelerate a huge focus from a real estate perspective on all the things Whitney's been talking about. And specifically, what I mean is, organizations right now are heavily focused on return to work from the perspective of three areas. It's the building preparedness, the workplace preparedness, and then the workforce preparedness. And by building, I mean the overall structure and the air quality, the ventilation, the lighting, all of those types of things. The workplace may be things like how you position desks, and are there partitions, and are there different kind of flows of traffic across the course of the day. And the workforce concept is the ability to have people do what Whitney was talking about, which is not be 9-to-5, not coming into the office all the time, but flex and work as needed, when, where, and based on, you know, both work and personal need. The data comes into this because, as part of this thing, we at Cushman and other organizations are starting to measure the actual quality of the building from a health and wellness perspective in a way that has not been done before. So we are starting to institutionalize the concept of measuring the health quality of a building, and whether or not it is a safe place. Is it ready for employees to come back into? Will it be prepared to provide all of these health benefits? Yes, to respond and protect people from this pandemic, but the types of things we're starting to measure and we're starting to look at, that's going to become institutionalized, and it's going to help us measure the health quality of buildings going forward. And as we start to understand the quality of the building performance from these aspects, and at the same time, we're measuring the well-being of the workforce, we can start to see the correlations in the data, and organizations are going to understand for, I think, really the first time, the specifics of how building quality can truly connect to and impact the performance of their people. And so I think because we're starting to measure it, we're making it part of our DNA, part of our fabric, it is going to force that paradigm change. And I'm really excited because all the things Whitney's talking about, I think the real estate industry, based on where we're being pushed by this crisis, is going to embrace this and make it part of what we measure and focus on going forward. So I think we've got a tremendous transition in a very positive way coming down the line.
Great. And Whitney, I sort of want to move the conversation on a little bit, and this is kind of off real estate, but very much in the wellness space. So I know we were talking about it before, but you know, when I look at what's happening now, we've kind of replaced the, what I call the, well, everyone called the road warrior mentality of the 80s, when the macho thing to do was to get up early, go to the airport, get on a plane, et cetera, et cetera. And we've all done it. Now it seems to me that everyone's just locked into Zoom calls or team calls or whichever software that they use. And the sort of the equivalent now is people being on calls for 1 hour at a time, back to back all day. And they consider that to be how you get work done. So everything we've talked about is all very well and good, but unless we change our way of working and managers allow us to work in a different way, surely we're going to have this same wellness issue, but exacerbated, even if we are working from home, and we're going to lose the benefits.
Yeah. So I think trust is a really powerful concept right now. The companies we work with that are pursuing the well-building standard, they have to verify that they have certain programs in place to convey how healthy their building is and what policies they have on sleep, on travel, on mental health, on parental leave to their employees. So they have to communicate this. They have to say, what are we doing about all these policies? How safe is the office? What are you breathing? That is not the norm. My hope is that I will never have to define in the future the difference between a building and a healthy building or a well building, because that's immediately followed by, well, what's not a healthy building? My hope is that this conversation removes the word health and wellness as an option. And this becomes what we do. We have an incredible and powerful role to take in looking at innovation, market drivers, to create spaces that enable resilience, immunity, and also prepare, you know, companies for what we will only see more of, which is zoonotic pandemics. Like, we knew this was coming in public health. We did not know the name. We did not know the timing of it, but we did know what the impact could be. So, and there are more coming. We do anticipate this will go through fall. There will see additional spikes. We are trying to get that level down, that once you contract it, is that we're able to treat it better. And of course, issues around vaccinations. But this will fundamentally shift the way that we think about space. And I don't think this is an option anymore. So circling back to your question, Michael, is so now people are at home and they're expected by their organization to continue to perform at extremely high levels. They are expected to take their professional life separate than their personal life. They are expected to be trusted by their organization to do a high level of work, even though they have a high level of optionality, which many organizations feel like, wait a minute, my worker can wear sweatpants all day and choose when to work. This is a disaster, right? I can't control when they're online. You see these draconian measures of organizations that are recording how long you spend on your computer, how long you step away for. And those organizations long-term are at increased vulnerability of losing workers. I think even the millennials before this were pushing on organizations to say, be purpose-driven. Let me connect with your message. Let me connect with your mission. Let me trust you. We see indicators in the financial market. Millennials want to invest in companies with purpose and transparency. We're closely tracking issues with ESG. These all relate. People want companies they trust. They want companies that they feel there's transparency. They want to know what their company is doing for their health. They want to know when it's going to be safe to return and how best to work from home. So you need to trust your workers, is that if you think that staring at a screen for 8 hours a day is somehow now healthy, You're sorely mistaken. We never evolved to connect with people. There's a lot of impacts it has on eye fatigue. There's impacts it has on overstimulating the brain when we're watching multiple screens. We're also reacting to this, not to mention we're evaluating just what our chin looks like at the wrong angle. And we're being asked to respond to 15 different screens at the same time. The era of burnout where people bragged, you know, I got up at 5 a.m. I traveled across the country. I saw 5 clients. I got home. People that brag about burnout and brag they didn't sleep are the first to get it. So this is the era of saying, take care of yourself, because if you are burning out, you basically are reducing host immunity. And that is a thing you need most right now. So I think companies that are getting real personal, real transparent, they're setting up trust networks to understand how their employees work best, given there might be kids or there might be parental responsibilities at home. There may be diversity of needs, which is not including 8 hours of screen time. We're going to see some really great innovations where people are looking at moving and talking. They're going to think about different times of the day. They're going to think about varying up their routine and how can they think creatively beyond just a screen. And again, I think that all comes back to trust. And if you have an organization that creates health, you have an organization that communicates the health that they're up to and is transparent about what they're up to and is adapting to the needs of their workers and is ahead of burnout and not behind it bragging, you're going to see those workers be most resilient. And in some ways, we've never seen the need for resiliency and immunity more than we have now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And we're running out of time here. So maybe any parting words from you, Stephen, around this idea of trust and how we move this conversation forward so we actually get what we need to perform well?
Yeah, my comment, and I was extremely excited listening to Whitney's perspective on this concept of trust. It's one of the core things that we're measuring with experience per square foot at home right now. And we're seeing in the data that the concept of this company trust, company-wide trust, is such a strong driver of all the things we've been talking about from this perspective of connectivity to the company culture and other measures of well-being and measures of connection to colleagues. So this concept of trust, I completely agree, is absolutely critical. And I think organizations going forward are going to have to. And it sounds like from Whitney saying, a lot are already starting to do that, which is extremely exciting. We at Cushman are doing that. And I think it's going to become an absolute must and a part of the fabric and DNA of how organizations work with their employees going forward and how they think about kind of helping employees navigate all the new work life concepts that we're going to be taking advantage of in the future. So couldn't agree more and very excited to hear that that's part of the dialogue here.
Great. And I think, guys, we could be talking about this for another hour, but I'm going to call it to a head. It's been fabulous having you on air. Please stay well, stay safe. And both Whitney and Stephen, really appreciate your time. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
both
very much.
It's
a pleasure.